my dear Judith and Janet and family, they're married. And all of Mary's friends. My heart is completely broken at this moment. Because I've lost, as it were, both arms.
Now is this just the new beginning.
infinity. It has unlimited possibility. And well, anyway, I said to Mary, would you help me with some prayer? She said, okay, but I can't afford it because I have to earn a living. And I don't have any time. So there was another gentleman on the retreat who said, I'll pay Mary a full salary and she can work three full days for you. And that's how, in this Long Island, New York area, she began to have time to work with us. Then when we saw we needed a structure to support the people who were doing sanctuary prayers, support groups and so on, and I asked her if she would be the executive director of a little organization that we started called Contemplative Outreach. And she said, okay. I didn't ask any questions of what else she was doing. I just wanted that okay. And then about a year later, we had the opportunity to start a live-in community which would incarnate the vision of Contemplative Outreach, provide a place where people could come and receive the unadulterated vigor of an interior life, of a life of prayer, so that they could bring it back into their daily life and begin to incorporate it into the daily life. And this involved living in a rather down at the heel house with two young men who were only one step away from being hippies.
Trials of daily life and the joys of daily life.
become the divine life manifesting itself in our littleness, in our weakness, and I dare to say, even at times in our sinfulness. And finally, that third source of contemplative prayer is bondage. Bondage. It's ecclesiastical in its effect, and ecclesiastical doesn't mean just coming to church. It means feeling your union and unity with everyone in the world, especially the poor and those in need, those you love. And it's these three things that make contemplative prayer transforming. Well, that's abstract. I'm not asking you to remember those three things. I'm only saying that Mary, in my view, was embodying each of those three things. The Trinity, her love of Christ, and the bonding. Now the bonding has two parts, two subdivisions. One is personal enhancement of your whole life. Whatever you've got gets bigger, even if it's your debt. Everything gets bigger. Your love of your family, your capacity to relate to others. Mary was leading a kind of quasi-contemplative life, like religious, but we deliberately never made it a religious life because we wanted it for laypersons. And it was the laypersons that we're trying to call or empower to take possession of their baptismal grace and to become what religious should be, namely the manifestation of the God of love in daily life. Now I noticed that Mary, as a result of 5 or 6 hours of centering prayer a day for 7 or 8 years, in addition to what she'd done before, was increasing her love of her family. She was becoming the happiest grandma on earth. She was loving her daughters more and more. She's relating to her brothers and sisters. And this was becoming a community problem. Because how do you fulfill your duties in the community and outside at the same time? That's your problem too. But we're contemplative outreach as a group is trying to come to groups to grips with how you do that. You don't leave prayer and you don't leave your duties. You don't leave your husband or your wife because you're becoming holy. And they are. You come to peace with everyone. And this personal enhancement has what I would conclude with what seems to me the most marvelous quality of Mary, and which I don't know whether I can ever stop missing. But I'm sure I'll see it growing in the others, as she had, because of her modest age, a certain star on some of the others in contemplative outreach. But what I would like to leave with you with is this extraordinary quality of empowerment. By that I mean the bonding with God becomes so exuberant that everything she is doing was becoming a prayer. Sister Bernadette was there at her deathbed. They were praying all day long, and she was saying, "We go into the next room, that's prayer. If we sit down, that's prayer. We have eggs and bacon, that's our prayer. If we go into discernment, that's our prayer. If you kneel down." Prayer is not so much what you do, it's why you do it and who you do it. In other words, it's all coming out of the center that has gradually become established. A center that is always ready for God's will, always willing, even if that will kills you. It's a trifle. From that perspective, dying is no problem, except to your relatives and friends. Some of you heard some of my tapes, and you remember the story of Bernie O'Shea, who was giving, and who was always ready to do God's will, and who, in a single moment, fell dead on the street in Aspen. Because there was no one, there was no need to delay. There was no need for preparation, no need for holy water. I recommend holy water in the church. But there's a point at which they've done their work, and you are the sacrament of the church. Whatever you do is pouring grace into the world, and this is the fruit, not just of a religious life, but of a life, how to a baptism and confirmation, fully understood through the eyes of faith enlightened by contemplative prayer. And in this eye of faith, enlightened by contemplative prayer, that Mary was giving to everybody in the last years of her life, and getting better at it all the time. And I saw that she had reached the peak of her ministry, and I was willing to let her go out of Chrysalis House and spend her whole time on the journey. She didn't want to do that. But that was the discernment she made. Weston, with the support of her wonderful community, was to provide her with the chance to do that as much as she wanted to. And that's what she was doing. When she died, as we say in the West, she died with her boots on. Or should I say, with her booties on. But she just never stops loving God, and death is not an interruption. And throughout our network, all through the States and beyond, I get the feedback, wonderful feedback, that it's a terrible shock, but somehow we feel the presence of God. We feel the joy of Mary. We feel her empowered through all this. In other words, the communion of saints knows no boundaries. And if we are on the same wavelength in any degree that Mary was on, our grief, our joy, our grief today is going to be turned into ever greater joy and sense that what she did, a lay woman, a divorced woman, a woman with a very difficult life, a woman in various ministries, but always growing, a woman who is now a classical example of a lay contemplative person. Maybe there are others, but I don't know anybody of this quality yet. And this to me is the very heart and soul of the Second Vatican Council. Spiritual renewal, especially the empowerment of lay people to take charge of the church, to take charge of its mission, and to take charge of its spiritual direction, which I'm sorry to say, few of the clergy are trained to do or religious. And that's why they're diminishing, but the Spirit is raising up lay persons who are more and more capable of providing the church with the interior spirit that it has to survive, has to have to survive into the next century. I'm going to miss Mary terribly, if you will. I can't see how to go on without her. But I know by faith that she hasn't finished her job. St. Therese of Lisieux said, I'm going to spend my heaven doing good upon earth. I'm just going to sit around up there and do nothing, and everybody else is in trouble. And the fact that Mary is interrupted so suddenly in the midst of a tremendous ministry, which was just a smashing success in Denver, and people hanging all over to get her advice, and she just slipped away. Notice no delay, like Bernie O'Shea. I think she one-upped Bernie O'Shea, actually. Because not only did she accept that, but as you know, her great philosophy, to welcome death or any event, and someone who welcomes death welcomes God. So whatever she's up to at the moment, I don't think she's sitting around. She's active. She's speaking to us on a new level. And to be tuned into that new level, you have only to pray, to do your own form of contemplative prayer. And I predict that Mary's death is not the end of suffering, but she's the, to me, a lay example of St. Therese of Lisieux. She's not doing it from a cloister. She'll be with you in the street, at the kitchen sink, and if necessary, in bed. Once again, my deepest sympathy to the family and to the members of Christmas House. May God be with us all, and may we, our sorrow be turned into joy and empowerment to go now and do likewise.